And welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
Welcome to this edition, episode number 57 of Revitalize and Replant. My name is Tom Rainer. I am joined by Jonathan Howe as we continue to ask the question, how do churches revitalize and what are some of the best ways to replant? And let me just simply say this to all of our listeners. I have been tremendously encouraged by the growth, by the momentum, and by the responses to this episode and to all the episodes that we have had, because when it's all said and done, we're obviously striking a chord with many of you out there. And what I really love about this, and by the way, thank you, North American Mission Board. We'll be talking about our sponsor at the end of this episode. But what I love about this is we shape each and every episode around your questions. So we're listening to you, we're hearing from you. And when we hear from you, we know that we're getting things that really are of interest to you. So once again, thank you for joining us. We're headed into episode 57. Before we blink an eye, we'll be at episode 100. That means we'll be having cake or ice cream or whatever the case may be. And we found a way to celebrate. As a matter of fact, I think, Jonathan, we should celebrate on episode number 61. You think so?
I don't know what we're going to celebrate with, but okay.
Episode number 61. We're going to celebrate. We need to have cake on episode number 61.
I mean, if it's up to me, we'd have cake every episode. But
well, 61 special.
Why is 61 special?
It's right after the 60th episode, Jonathan.
Okay.
So we need to celebrate 61. Okay. So we'll do that. Okay. Robert frames our question today.
Yeah, Robert, this episode could be like the red flag question episode, because there are so many red flags in this question.
Yes.
The church I pastor has been approached by a struggling church in town about a merger. In their own words, they are, quote, outdated and ineffective ministry that is operated by the same six families that have been doing it for 40 years, who have effectively run off every pastor that has questioned the way they do things. I'm hesitant to commit our church to anything right now, but why would a church operate that way? And is there any hope for us to succeed in this merger or acquisition?
Okay, so we frame this in the context of why declining churches run off pastors.
Yeah.
And help me to understand that framing as the answer to Robert's question.
Yeah, he wants to know why churches do this. Why do they run off pastors? Why do they, you know, six families, 40
yes.
years,
yes,
they've been running the church. Why would a church do that? Why would other people let them do that?
I sent a text to Amy J. last night. Oh, by the way, thank you for I'll thank you on there for the help of the Church Answer scanning that you and Amy worked on.
So cool.
I appreciate that. And I was texting her back and forth on that issue, and somehow in the context of our text exchange, I said, "Have you noticed that we're getting more and more of these similar requests? Not just questions coming in, but requests for help. They're pretty much framed with similarities around this mm-hmm. particular one." And it just seems like 2-3 a week, not just answer a question, but come to our church and help us, Tom, yeah. or Sam, or Jonathan, or whoever the case may be. And so either we're acknowledged to be someone who can help them, or either the frequency is increasing, and my guess is it's some of both. So, Robert, you ask a good question. You ask a question worthy of reward, and Jonathan is going to tell you. Johnny, would you tell us what his prize is?
He's going to get a copy of Autopsy of a Deceased Church.
Yes.
As well as Reclaiming Glory. Autopsy of a Deceased Church by Tom Rainer, and Reclaiming Glory, obviously, by Mark Clifton.
If Jonathan appears to be a little bit distracted this morning, what did you wake up to this morning, Jonathan?
Nothing. I came to work just fine, and then my wife called me and said
the
house may be burning down. So literally.
And it's a house that you moved to fairly recently.
Yeah, we had an electrical fire in the yard or something. The lighting system or whatever got caught on fire outside.
I've mentioned to Nellie Jo how I would like a little bit of landscape lighting at our home, and she never has been for it. My guess is,
be careful with it. Apparently.
If she hears this story, she'll never be for it
again.
So I'm sorry,
but everything's okay. I'm just a little distracted.
I can think so. You had a big fire truck on the cul-de-sac.
Yeah. You get a call from your wife saying, "I just called 911." Like, hello.
Wow. In her own usual calm and placid way, she probably did. All right, so anyway, Robert gets the prize.
Why are declining churches running off pastors? I mean, this one is just a complete, this church seems like a complete mess.
Yes, Yes.
I'm you know, putting it nicely.
Yes.
That's nicely. But a lot of churches run off pastors just for various reasons, and it's not a good thing because that hurts with revitalization. We've talked about that with pastoral tenure.
Yep.
And one of the main reasons they do it is that the pastor was not the magic bullet.
Sam is in contact with a church in Florida that in some ways is pretty close to this description. There are a little bit of differences, but close enough where the principles will be the same. The church has declined. I don't know what the attendance of this particular church
is.
No,
I didn't say.
Six families, but the church with which Sam has been communicating is probably under 20 in average attendance, or maybe that's on a good day. Attendance has pretty large facilities for a church of that size. Probably would be better suited for a church of 500 in attendance in terms of all their facilities, mm-hmm. everything from worship center to education space to fellowship hall, and the list goes on and on and on. And needless to say, they've gone through a series of pastors.
Yeah.
The last one left mostly involuntary. They made it where he could do nothing but resign. And so they contact Sam thinking that, hey, this guy can help us. You know, who you going to call? Sam. And you call Sam and say, here's our situation. They have one question and one question only. Can you help us find a pastor? Instead of, why are pastors leaving? Why are we running off pastors? In other words, with every cycle of a pastor leaving, usually under bad terms, with every cycle of there being some type of conflict in the church, every time there's a decline, and the answer is, well, we've got to get another pastor. Well, we've got to get another pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And it all falls back on that. Instead of asking the question, what are we doing that might be running off the pastor? In fact, sometimes they actually run off the pastor. Sometimes in this particular case, the pastor ran off quickly because he was feeling the pressure. So when churches think that the pastor is the magic bullet, and by the way, I've talked about the magic bullet a whole lot. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
The Kennedy assassination, the pristine bullet, and the origin of that. When the pastor does not solve all the woes of the church, the conclusion is, once again, we need another pastor. They never get out of that mode because it's never anything we are doing, the church says. It's always the pastor.
All right. Number two, the pastor becomes an object of frustration.
Marriage, Jonathan.
Okay.
Marriage. Marriage, Amy J. Marriage, Tom. Are there times in a marriage where maybe you are the object of frustration, even though you are not really the problem? And so when it's all said and done, any kind of relationship can be the object of frustration. Marriage can be the object of frustration. The husband and the wife had a bad day, and so you're going to focus upon that particular person. Well, at a church, the most natural object of frustration is going to be the pastor. Or if it's in a situation where they're staff persons and it's student ministry, it might be the student minister. If it's some other area, children's ministry, whatever, it might be that person. But when there are things that are going wrong, usually the heat is going to be felt by one or a few people. And so the pastor becomes the object of the frustration. And as a result, the pastor becomes the person that is criticized, that is feeling the pressure, and that begins to see, okay, anything that goes wrong is going to be my fault. So, Jonathan, we have two of these. Pastor was not the magic bullet. The pastor becomes the object of frustration. Certainly, we see these as two of the most common reasons why they run off pastors.
Yeah.
But now there's a third.
Yeah, that's the pastor burns out. And I guess that's because of maybe the first two kind of lead to the third one.
Yeah.
And the pastor burns out and leaves?
Yeah, this is mutually assured destruction. Just kind of a phrase related to a nuclear holocaust. It's
not quite the same, but okay.
Yeah, but it is kind of the
escalated
same.
Escalated things here.
One provokes, the other responds. One provokes, the other responds. These are all so closely tied together that you cannot help but say one affects the other. It's not
totally
just one leading to the other. It is a web where you cannot tell, all right, Are they frustrated because he's the magic bullet and he's not the magic bullet? Or are they looking at him to be the magic bullet, and as a result, the pastor can do nothing right, so he begins to burn out? You can see how all of these integrate and work together.
They refuse to you know, do the work of the ministry with the pastor and expect him to do everything. Then he burns out because they've placed these wrong expectations, lofty expectations.
Lofty expectations.
He's going to do everything, and we don't have to do anything. And then he burns out and he leaves, and then, it's his fault.
One of the most common expressions that church members in this particular situation will use, whether it's exactly like this and whether it's implied or explicit, is, that's what we pay the pastor to do. And so, essentially, what do you pay the pastor to do? Everything. Everything. Basically, the pastor is supposed to be a country club manager.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to meet the needs of the members of the country club.
Yeah. And here are our grievances. Fix our problems.
Here are our needs.
And that's it.
Everything becomes about what are our needs, our preferences. We've talked about that ad infinitum, beginning with I am a church member and moving forward to this day. How can the pastor not burn out? Now, could it possibly be that the pastor is burning out because some of these issues are the pastor's problem? Sure. Sure, that could be it. But we're talking about churches that have perpetual turnover. We're talking about churches that continue to see pastors go with short tenure. And by the way, let's pause for just a moment. Not hit the pause button, Jonathan, but let's pause our thoughts for just a moment. What is, and this will be rhetorical, but I want to expand upon this, what is short-term tenure?
Under 3 years?
I would think so. I would think that would definitely be a short-term tenure, because when we look at the life cycle of a pastor, we typically have the first year being the honeymoon, the years maybe to year two, and then somewhere around year three, you come to the time of conflict and crisis. And then if you can get past year five, you typically can have some pretty good years. I was talking to Jimmy Scroggins, pastor of Family Church, and he was saying what he encourages pastors to do is to be persistent and stick around through the breakout.
Yeah.
Get to that point where you feel like you're actually leading.
Yeah.
And that
he just celebrated his 10th anniversary.
He did. He did. Congratulations, Jimmy Scroggins, pastor of Family Church in South Florida. And I used to say in West Palm Beach.
But it's all over the place now.
It's all over the place in Southwest Florida. I think they have 11 campuses now.
Golly.
And growing. But we talk about pastoral tenure, and sometimes, if not most of the time, the pastoral burnout occurs around year three,
mm-hmm.
Maybe leading up to year three. And so either the pastor says, I'm leaving, or the pastor is forced out. In this particular case, the pastor will leave because of pressure, or it will be a forced termination, one of the two. So you get past the honeymoon. I would conjecture honeymoons are getting shorter because expectations are higher because desperation is deeper. So
I would agree with that.
I would think that the honeymoon period is shorter, and then as a result of the honeymoon period being shorter, you lead into the crisis and conflict period quicker. And if you can get through that conflict and crisis period, years two, three, four, what, there's no magic number, but somewhere in there. And if you can make it to year five, again, that's not, 10 years not a magic bullet in itself, but if you can make it to year five, then you have the good possibility of beginning to see something healthy in the church. But let's go back to Robert's question. The church he pastors doesn't let them get to year five.
Well, it's the other church that they're willing to merge with.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking at the question wrongly. So they have not let them get to that point. So you know what I think about this church that he's about to merge with? I think the merger is going to be the magic bullet.
Yeah.
And you know it might be, but it won't be their church anymore.
No. Well, I think they think that it would be.
Yes.
But if you're going to merge with this church, it doesn't need to be a merger. It needs to be an acquisition, and there needs to be clear expectations and agreements in place on the front end, or it's going to be your problem.
By the way, I have some new nomenclature for these words. I'm not going to give it on the air but I'll give it.
Got me all excited.
Well, it really is pretty good stuff, but it comes from Sam, and I don't want to be the first one to talk about this nomenclature that I think is very, very powerful. But in this case, It is not a merger. It would have to be an acquisition. And an acquisition means you are acquiring a church, but you're implanting a new DNA that is there. And I don't know if the other members are going to survive that DNA.
Yeah. All right. Number four, decline often leads to blame and conflict.
Yeah. If the economy is terrible, you blame the president.
Yeah.
Typically. So if there is a situation in an organization where the organization is in decline, it is usually the CEO who feels that pressure and ultimately maybe even has to leave. I mean, look in the corporate world, GE.
Yeah.
GE was the darling organization. And by the way, Jack Welch often goes to Jimmy Scroggins' church.
Yeah, you're tying everything together
here. Church. And the Welch era was an unbelievable and unprecedented era of growth. Well, his successor comes in and things don't go as well. And now he has been encouraged to, he has left. GE is not falling apart, but it sure isn't what it used to be. And what's the response? New CEO. So when a church begins to decline, when it gets into this condition where it's down to this few families and they're wondering what's going on when they can't look in the mirror, this decline often leads to blame and conflict. That blame and conflict focuses upon the pastor.
All right. Finally, the pastor's family becomes discouraged and withdraws. And I'm guessing that the pastor follows suit because the family stuff impacts the church stuff and gone.
I think you can probably remember this particular situation, Jonathan. It was a pastor with whom we both have familiarity. He's no longer at the church. He was forced out. He was forced terminated. But do you maybe you'll pick up the memory of it without me being too specific to try to reveal it. But it started off with frustration with the pastor, and then the children just got really, really hurt by what was going on, seeing daddy attack. So they asked for permission to go to another church in town. And eventually the wife said, I'm not going to that church anymore. And you could begin to see the handwriting on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
That,
totally.
Wow, your family's not here? Well, they can't really take the criticism and verbal abuse that's taking place. And the children want to go to another church and a healthy church in town. So it is typically symptomatic for if you're attacking the pastor, the family member, the spouse, the children are going to feel the pain and they're going to understand that this is not a healthy situation. They may not be as blunt as the church which we're talking about, but they may withdraw in terms of their spirit. They may withdraw in terms of their commitment. They may withdraw in terms of their demeanor. They just will, you'll be able to see them. You'll be able to read their body language, and they're really not engaged in the church anymore. So what happens then? You blame the pastor's family. Oh, your wife isn't doing as much as she used to do. The kids just don't seem very happy. They didn't come to every event that we had.
Yeah.
And so now the focus is not only on the pastor, but it's on the pastor's family. And that typically is a sign that the pastor is going to walk away or be forced out pretty quickly. And you know what the next church will ask? The next search committee will ask?
How involved is your wife in ministry?
And how involved are your kids in ministry? Because
they'll swing the pendulum the other way. They want the opposite of what they just had.
Yeah.
Seen it so many times.
Exactly. You just go the direction you think needs fixing right away. And so you just move in that direction. That is not the problem. That is not the issue. So This is so symptomatic of declining and dying churches. The pastor, not the magic bullet, pastor becomes the object of frustration. Pastor burns out. Pastor, the recipient of blame and conflict. The pastor's family becomes discouraged and withdraws. These are why declining churches often run off pastors. And as a result, the churches are now in a cycle of decline, despair, and death.
Yeah. All right, back to Robert's question, his last part there. Is there any hope for them to succeed in this merger acquisition?
Yes.
Always hope.
Yes.
But it's going to be easy.
Well, it has to be an acquisition, not a merger. Secondly, the remaining people have to be clear that it's going to be a new church. We're not going to replicate your old church, and you're probably not going to like the change.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure you want it? And then thirdly, the church that is acquiring really has to officially acquire.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to be owners of the property. They have to have everything moved over to them. Here's my response. Robert, if you're ready to go to that length to acquire, yes, I think it can succeed. But I think you're going to have conflict with those who are there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You got to be ready for it. And probably, most likely, they will leave because the acquisition is no longer the magic bullet.
Because for 40 years, they've gotten their way.
Yep. You're not going to change that overnight.
And it's really risky that you may be the next guy they run off.
Exactly. Unless you change everything.
Yeah.
And changing everything.
Which is possible.
I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen.
Totally doable.
And this is one of the ways that I see hope for declining and dying churches.
Yeah.
I'm always so thankful that the North American Mission Board is our sponsor, because they are just right on the cutting edge of church planning, evangelism. They're really, really strong in evangelism and providing resources there, revitalization and replanting. And they're the reason that we are doing this podcast now. They're the reason that Mark Clifton joins us every other podcast to be a part of Revitalize and Replant. Thank you, Kevin Ezell. Thank you, North American Mission Board.
Yeah, and the North American Mission Board is our sponsor here at Revitalize and Replant, along with Church Replanters. .com. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committed to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches while simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new ones. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.
All right. Thank you once again for joining us on episode number 57. Not the most perky of episodes, not the most joyful of topics, but question that is often.
Revitalization is often not perky.
That is true. But this one, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, downer, 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 downer. So thank you. But I hope that it has been helpful, and I hope it can lead to revitalize and replanting of churches, because we are here to try to work together to help churches become healthier.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play, or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.